Hey, finance folk. Welcome to the EU Finance Podcast. My name is Leidos Polubinskas, and today we're talking about the latest EU banking package. Thanks to reforms implemented in the EU after the financial crisis of 2008-2009, the EU banking sector entered the COVID-19 crisis in much better shape. However, while the overall level of capital in EU banks is now, on average, satisfactory, some of the problems that were identified in the wake of the financial crisis had not yet been addressed. So, back in 2021, the European Commission adopted a review of EU banking rules, the Capital Requirements Regulation and the Capital Requirements Directive. The reason we're talking about this now is because the member states and the European Parliament have agreed on this new banking package, these rules, in mid-December of last year. These new rules will ensure that EU banks become more resilient to potential future economic shocks while contributing to climate neutrality. I've asked the head of the EU's Banking Regulation and Supervision Unit, Almoro Rubin de Servin, to fill us in on where we are with the banking reform. And is it really the final step in this reform of banking rules? Let's go. Welcome, Almoro, to the podcast. I'm glad to see you here.
Thanks, Aidas. Very happy to be here.
Okay. This is a really big subject, so let's get into it right away. We often hear people talking about the Basel rules. Me, when I think of Basel, I think of a relatively industrial city with a really great art scene. But obviously, it's got something to do with banking, otherwise we wouldn't be talking about it. Can you give me a little more details on this? What are the Basel rules and why do they matter?
Yeah, no, indeed, Basel is from the city you know in Switzerland. Because it's where the Bank of International Settlement, which is a bank of central bank, settled was established since 1930. So a bit of history is good here. And so in 1974, after some international financial crisis, in particular the failure of a German bank, which was called Bankhaus Herstatt, which failed on international foreign exchange issues, the Bank of International Settlement decided to create a dedicated committee to improve the quality of bank supervision worldwide. And the committee grew. Well, today there are 45 institutions from 20 jurisdictions with many, many Europeans participating. And what the Basel Committee did was subsequently, at the beginning, started to work on supervision, but then started to work on standards. And each time in responses to crisis. And so they had a series of standards. The first one was the Basel Accord, which came into force, was agreed in 1990. The second, it was Basel II, which was agreed in 2004. And then the Basel III, which came after the global financial crisis 2007 and 2008. And actually also from this sequence, Basel II and Basel III, we also have, and I'll come back maybe later, we have also why we have in European legislation directives and regulations with names 1, 2, and 3.
Okay. Okay. Well, since there's Basel 1, 2, and 3, like a Marvel movie franchise, we've clearly implemented Basel rules before. And I understand that in this banking package that we're implementing Basel rules again. So what's new this time?
So we did implement all the Basel standards progressively through the various directives and regulations. There has been a change, however, on the scale and the complexity since the global financial crisis, which showed that actually the problems in the banking sector were very significant. And so what we've did in the Basel III standard was actually agreed in steps and was also implemented in steps. So in the first wave, which is in our jargon CRR, Capital Requirements Regulation, and the CRD4, the Capital Requirements Directive 4, which was agreed in 2013, was about capital liquidity. Then we had the second package, which was on leverage, large exposures, and other aspects. And the third and final package, which we just finalized, is mostly about risk measurement. And with that, to some extent, today, we're completing a very long reform process that started, and the origins are really in the global financial crisis 2008. And so we took 15 years to put it in place, and there will be a number of years to implement it. But it's a complete change on how banks are regulated.
Now, when you say we, it took us 15 years to implement it, you're not talking about the EU being slow on this, but rather this is an international effort, obviously.
It's completely an international effort. And actually, part of the work is to ensure that this is implemented by all major jurisdictions. And actually, this time, the EU is ahead compared to others, despite the regulatory process, which is more complex. In the EU, the Basel standards are implementing EU law, and require that it's a commission proposal and which need approval by council and parliament. So they have a strong democratic backing and the backing of 27 member states, which gives a very significant support to the rules, also because they're applied to all banks. Mm-hmm. In US and UK, for instance, the rules are applied by the supervisor directly, and they don't need to have approval by parliament.
Mm-hmm. Okay, speaking of member states, do these rules or our implementation of them, do they cater in some way to the specifics of the EU economy, or is it just, you know, blanket implementation of international rules?
2 points there. First, actually, the EU and a lot of its institutions, ECB, a lot of national supervisors, participate to the Basel Committee. And so we contribute already in developing the standards, the sum of European aspect. And then when implementing, we also do take into account the number of specificities of the European banking sector and the European economy. And that's normal to some extent when you design a global framework, which sometimes is very detailed because it's hundreds and hundreds of pages. It's normal that jurisdictions, when they implement it, they tailor to the situation on the ground, also to the legal structure that they have. Also, you have to consider that we apply Basel to the entire banking sector, to 4,500 banks, because we think that it is gives a lot of resilience to the banking sector, the fact having a same set of rule applying to everybody. And we had the counterexample of that in the US last spring, when you had all the regional banks failing because they were not under the same rules. And so you had a lot of depositors flying away from the regional banks into the large banks. And so the applying different rules to different categories of banks is actually a factor of instability, which we don't have in the EU. But the wide application also requires that we implement the rules in a proportionate way. But and catering for EU specificities was also part of the political mandate that we got from Parliament and Council, was to say, yeah, do these standards, but do them and put them in place in a way to ensure that this is sound, but doesn't have unintended consequences. And the way we did it in particular was to have long phase-in periods on certain measure to give time to banks to adapt.
Okay. I always find it interesting how EU legislation is going to impact well, for lack of a better term, people's everyday lives. And people's everyday lives is obviously economy. So do we know what the impact on EU banks' capital requirements will be and what the wider impact on the EU economy will be? And when are we going to start seeing these impacts?
So I think there is a direct impact of the rules in terms of additional capital that the banks might need at the end of the period, which in itself is not very significant because it's probably less than 10% increase compared to what they have today over a number of years. And EBA is assessing this on a continuous basis and publishing actually in a very transparent way the analysis. But the impact on the economy has also been seen not just on the direct impact on the capital of the banks, but also in terms of the benefits that having a stable and resilient banking system brings to the economy. Mm-hmm. Only if you have a resilient banking system, then it can support the economy. If you have a banking system which is fragile and undercapitalized, then it would be more preoccupied to ensure that the banks take less risks and would help much less the economy, or even worse, would create economic crisis. So the resilience that the implementation of Basel brings is a fundamental condition. It's a necessary condition for the European competitiveness.
Sure, I guess that makes a lot of sense. I mean, if the banks are stable and they're strong, then people are confident and they go about their business creating new jobs, you know, more economic growth. So yeah, sure. Okay. The many thousands of faithful friends of the podcast know that I often try to steer the conversation towards one of my favorite subjects, which is, of course, green finance or sustainability. Does this proposal in any way affect or contribute to the EU's green transition?
So it does. It does in two ways. The first one is it requires banks to draw transition plans form a view and to have plans for how they manage exposure towards environmental, social and governance risks. And the supervisors have been given powers to oversee the plan to ensure that the plans are good and that the plans are properly implemented and put in place. So this is not it's called Pillar 1 requirement. It's not a hard requirement, but it empowers the supervisors to push the banks to consider the risk, in particular the risk they face. And that's frankly very important, both for large banks, but also for small banks who might be exposed and less diversified. If you're a small bank in a valley who's entirely dependent on having snow for the ski resort, and then suddenly there's no snow, the ski resort goes down, and a small bank in the valley is completely exposed to the impact of climate change. So it's very important that banks of all sizes have plans to how they are going to manage their exposure to environmental, social, and governance risk. We also, and that's a second measure, extend a disclosure framework. So banks, the large banks already today, and this will enter into force in the coming months, have to report on their exposure to a number of sectors, and also on terms a certain ratio, the green asset ratio, on the backing book ratio, on how many assets in their balance sheet actually are green, to give visibility and to investors. And this actually will be extended to all the banking sector system. So all banks will have to report. And then there are a number of little technical issues which are also important. One, for instance, there is an infrastructure supporting factor, which is a lower requirement in terms of capital charge for certain exposure to infrastructures. This has been green. It will be available only if the funding from the banks go to infrastructures which are green, to simplify. Or in a different context, in the context of collaterals, banks will be able to be required to factor in ESG considerations when they value physical collaterals they receive from obligors. If they receive cars, and when they do car lending, the fact that the car is going to phase out or not, or whether it's more electric, will have a lot of impact on how the banks will value the collateral, or the same on mortgages. I think that is going to be also an incentive for the banks to consider also the collateral they receive when they do the lending.
Got it. You know what? I have to admit that I was not expecting this to be, because this is a massive subject, obviously, and I was really not expecting the explanation to be able to be put into such simple and understandable terms.
So, no, it's a relatively, we're doing changes which are common sense, which encourage the banks to do the right thing and then supervisors to engage. I think where we've been short, there was a demand from some to have direct capital charges on certain exposure to penalize lending to certain sectors. like the fossil fuel sector, for instance. This was not taken up in council and parliament either, because it was thought it was premature, not completely thought through in the way and in design. And because probably the lending to the sector is certainly also an international issue, so just doing it on a European scale would not have achieved the objective. So we've done a number of things, not all that was the were put on the table, but I think we've done the right steps at this stage. And there's a lot of work still going on to reflect further on what could be done in terms of encouraging the banks to manage the risks and accompany the green transition.
So the story is not over. I mean, you're still going to be working towards the future. And, every machine needs to be fine-tuned and you need to have tune-ups and oil changes.
The story is not over also because the green transition is evolving. Mm. And so I think we've moved this into a mainstream of the consideration that the banks have to have. And this, I think, is something that's being achieved. It takes time as well. But also how the transition evolves, I think we have to see how it evolves and how banks can accompany that in a useful way. So I think that's also an argument to go in step by step in what to do, and also to be careful in how you use prudential rules for different objectives.
Got it. Almoran, thank you so much for dropping by and for giving me this really great explanation. I really feel that I've been educated on something today. So thank you very much for coming.
It is my pleasure.
Okay, here's my takeaway. This banking package makes sure that the EU banking sector is fit for the future and can continue to be a reliable and sustainable source of finance for the EU economy. The package faithfully implements the international Basel III agreement while taking into account specific features of the EU's banking sector, like low-risk mortgages. This is important for the stability and resilience of our banks. The EU does it by taking into account the specificities of the EU banking sector and avoids a significant increase in capital requirements. It seems that this package does indeed mark the final step in this reform of banking rules. That's not to say we won't be talking about banking reform in the future. The EU knows that any good machine needs regular maintenance, and the EU is on it. There's more information in the link in the show notes. That wraps up another episode of the EU Finance Podcast. Like and subscribe. Bye.